Well, let me give you an example. I was always a big fan of a new airplane that you do a runway flight.
Right.
That you lift it off 6 inches, maybe a couple feet in the air, and you feel it out a little bit, and then you land. Because the worst thing that can happen there is probably not going to kill you. And it may not even injure you. The very worst thing that can happen with an airplane's flying qualities, if you don't get very far off the ground and you don't have obstacles to run into, in those days we didn't at Mojave,
right.
you're probably not gonna get injured. So we always did that. We always insisted. And in fact, what we had is we would take it up to higher speed than we wanted to fly, and we'd be sure to throttle back before we'd lift off. Because people, when they get off the ground on the first flight, they're thinking about this and this and this. They're not thinking about their left hand on the throttle, and they'll leave it up. And before they know it, they can't land in the rain and the rest of the runway because they're at 40 feet and 40 knots above stall. So anyway, we were really big on that. In fact, Dick's going to tell you later, I'm sure, about flying the first flight of the Starship. We didn't tell Beechcraft. And it's a neat story, he'll tell you later, but we actually did a runway flight before they showed up. But anyway, now fast forward to 2003. I go to my best friend over here, and he is my best friend.
Thank you.
And I say, Mike, we can't do a runway flight on this new airplane. We are going to drop you at 50,000 feet and say, have a nice day.
Yeah, that was
And I'll tell you what the most emotional thing that I can remember in my life was waiting for you to say something after we dropped Spaceship One. Now, Spaceship One was the first airplane I ever designed or built that had outboard horizontal tail. That's a new configuration. The tail is in upwash, not in downwash. Big difference. It's a new configuration. Don't even count the feather. It was a bizarre, new, untested, no wind tunnel testing at all. And we dropped Mike up there at almost 50,000 feet. We wanted him to have a lot longer to live if it didn't fly well, or at least a lot of time to get out of it, you know. So we decided to take him as high as we could go and let him go. And I'm sitting here waiting. Come on, Mike, tell us. And, you know, I didn't go in the little trailer that we had to look at the data. I says, for some reason, I said, I want to see this airplane with my eye. And I went outside with binoculars. And I didn't look at the data on that. I watched the airplane, and I had a radio to my ear. And I can't even say this without getting choked up nowadays. When you said, it flies like a dream.
That's right.
I just lost it. I absolutely lost it. Oh, the biggest risk that we were going to ever take on a first flight, and he says it flies like a dream. God damn it, I tell you, all this pressure and worry that I had for that 2 years that it took from the time we started spending Paul Allen's money until we flew that airplane. By the way, that program is 3.5 years long, and 2 years it was covert. Nobody knew we were doing a manned space program. That's weird, right? But anyway, when he says it flies like a dream, I just an enormous burden left me. Wow. Because here's my best friend, and he's going to make a good landing.
Wow.
You know,
Mike,
and I'll never forget.
Tell your Dick, go ahead.
Well, Bert has enjoyed over the years a very admirable safety record from all the weird airplanes that he's done. And there's a reason for that. And Mike Melville came out, and he had a very big one. And I never met Mike before. But anyway, I was this fighter pilot, this wild fighter pilot, and I just like to roam around the skies and do all this fighter pilot stuff. And so the first time we went out, Mike and I flew, and I had the very easy production one, and he had his very big one. And we went out and we did some dogfighting over Mojave. And of course, I knew a little bit more about it than Mike did, and I was able to defeat him. And so we came down and I briefed him. I says, hey, Mike, there's a high-speed yo-yo and you can use cutoff and so forth. And then we went up again. And then there wasn't any me beating him anymore. And then I could beat him every once in a while. We came down and debriefed that one. And that's the last time that I was ever able to get on his tail. But I want to say something about Mike, and this is really very important that everybody understands this, is that there's a lot of good pilots in this world, a lot of skilled pilots, but it's a very unique thing when you can be a test pilot and you can be faced with unusual circumstances and very coolly with incredible skill and courage and handle that. And Mike was able to do that. I taught him how to fly formation and chase. And I tell you what, he was probably one of the best formation wingmen that I've ever had, military, any other place. And I would trust him with my life. And when he asked me to fly back with him to his hometown, I says, hey, you're the flight lead and I'm your wingman, and let's go to South Africa. But there's been many, many incidents that I think any lesser pilot than Mike, that Bert would have lost his safety record. Yeah. And I think Bert will agree with
that. Yeah, that's right.
But this guy right here is probably... that very unique, rare talent for his ability to do that. And as you're a test pilot, you have to realize that this airplane is not going to fly like the Cessna 172 that I trained on. It's going to be a lot different. And a lot of things. The ones that I remember just lately is when you lost, the airplane started rolling going into space. And they called him, I may be a little wrong on this, and called him to abort because it was out of control. And Mike reached up to abort, and he says, you know, Bert really needs this mission. Besides that, I can see black sky. And Mike did not abort. He hung in there, and he flew that son of a gun.
He could see the horizon out of the side windows going around.
No, but Mike is a very uniquely talented airplane. And the time he took off in the spaceship, the Starship, when it had an aileron jam, I could probably draw a lot of things out of my mind right now about flying and chasing each other. And every time I'd go out and fly a new airplane, and just this other engine program that we were on, it's a very unique thing, never been done before. I call it Mike, and he's on my chase, and I always felt a hell of a lot better. And even in our little rocket plane that we flew, Mike was there chasing it.
How much of it being that good, how much of that can be learned, and how much is intuitive or just comes naturally to some people be able to do
Mike
that?
Mike would learn really fast. Now, he wasn't that experienced when he got there. But with this wild fighter pilot, as his two leads, and the fun that we had out there, boy, he learned up really quick.
You're listening to live coverage of Theater in the Woods on EAA Radio.
An interesting story. Dick was planning to fly this little airplane to Oshkosh nonstop, and in a couple of days, which would be like Tuesday or Wednesday of Oshkosh, he would fly all day, some 15 or 16 hours, between here and Menominee or Green Bay. What was it? Menominee, I think.
Oshkosh, Menominee.
And all day during the Oshkosh show, he'd come over and circle the tower and disappear for another couple hours, you know, and he'd go back and forth. Ed Lesher was here on the field, and the old record was set by his teal, and he's watching us beat his record, right? Well, Dick, on about the third circuit, had an engine failure and dead-sticked into Green Bay, okay? And I get this, we didn't have cell phones, but I get this call from the tower that said, the pilot that just crashed or came here without an engine failure wants you to know. You know, Dick gave him my phone number, and somebody took it from the I'd left him the phone number you call with this phone booth, right? So I found out that Dick had was not coming back around on the next ride. Okay, so we got an airplane with a broken engine. We put it on a truck. We hauled it back here. We didn't have any place to put it, so we just put it on the flight line, and John Monette came by, and he looked at that, and he says, well, hell, that's a Barker engine, no wonder. And I think I can say that.
It's true.
Some of these people aren't alive anymore. But and he says, well, I make a better Volkswagen engine, and you, next time you ought to try that. And I said, well, how about right now? Why don't you get me one of those engines? And he thought I was kidding. And within an hour, he was in a van driving down to Chicago, was it? Milwaukee,
I think.
Somewhere near Milwaukee. And taking an engine out of something and drove it back, and it ended up here like 3 a.m. or something. And we were out there, and we had car headlights turned on. We were out on the flight line in the dark, pulling out the Barker engine and installing a new Monette engine. Now, it was very different. It had this prop extension, and it had a whole bunch of stuff that was different. The throttle was backwards. So, but we're out there. We didn't take the airplane into an air-conditioned maintenance tent. Mm-hmm. We didn't have cell phones, but I get this call from the tower that said, the pilot that just crashed or came here without an engine failure wants you to know, Dick gave him my phone number. somebody took it from the, I'd left him the phone number you call with this phone booth, right? So I found out that Dick was not coming back around on the next ride. Okay, so we got an airplane with a broken engine. We put it on a truck, we hauled it back here. We didn't have any place to put it, so we just put it on the flight line. And John Monette came by, and he looked at that, and he says, well, hell, that's a Barker engine, no wonder. I think I can say that.
It's true.
Some of these people aren't alive anymore, but... and he says, well, I make a better Volkswagen engine. And you, next time, you ought to try that. And I said, well, how about right now? Why don't you get me one of those engines? And he thought I was kidding. And within an hour, he was in a van driving down to Chicago, was it?
Milwaukee, I think.
Somewhere near Milwaukee. And taking an engine out of something. And drove it back, and it ended up here like 3 a.m. or something. And we were out there, and we had car headlights turned on. We were out on the flight line in the dark, pulling out the Barker engine and installing a new Monette engine. Now, it was very different. It had this prop extension, and it had a whole bunch of stuff that was different. The throttle was backwards. So, but we're out there. We didn't take the airplane into an air-conditioned maintenance tent. We didn't have one. And over a period of about a day, as I recall, maybe a day and a half, we were ready to fly that airplane. And when we were ready to fly it, it was during the air show on Saturday night, and the last day at Oshkosh was Sunday. Now, what do you do how do you do a flight test, a functional test of a new engine? You can't do it during the air show, okay? In those days, the air show ran pretty late. And, I got with Dick and I said, listen, Dick, I've flown this airplane probably 40 or 50 times, and you've only flown it 3. I'm going to do the test of that new engine. And Dick agreed. So we went over to the guys who were announcing the biplane acts, where they say, well, the next one's going to be up, and he's so-and-so, and he's got a biplane, and it goes, roar, 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 roar. And then they go room, 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 and then they land, and then they say, boy, that was great. Let's put him in the Volkswagen, run him down the flight line, and everybody cheers. And then the next thing is another biplane act, and he goes, I went over there and talked those guys into doing a flight test. An untested engine on a very easy that just crashed 2 days before and doing it during the air show.